Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, June 13th. New pet food pantry opens Thursday. Midland's Animal Services Initiative to aid residents facing challenges. The story was written by Ben Schaffer. Midland Animal Services will begin distributing pet food from its new pantry Thursday. Animal Services launched a dog and cat food pantry for residents facing challenges in providing for their animals. Melissa Griffin Hobson, Animal Services Director, said the program is part of a larger initiative to help residents keep their pets around the home, with a plan for more initiatives this summer. Quote, "For so many people, their pets are their family, so this provides them services or the nutrition the animal needs so they can keep that pet in their house versus having to turn them over to us," she said. The food at the pantry can come from numerous sources, including donations from the community, Griffin Hobson said. In addition, Fix West Texas is a Greater Goods charity ambassador, meaning it receives large amounts of pet food. Animal Services can pay a small fee to receive that food to distribute to residents. Depending on the number of pets and type of pet a resident has, the amount of food each resident receives and how long it will last will vary. Quote, "We have from small wet food to huge bags, and will try to accommodate the family based on their needs," Griffin Hobson said. In the shelter, Animal Services feeds Hills Science Diet pet food to its animals. It prefers to keep shelter pets on a uniform brand and food so they do not experience gastrointestinal issues. However, since this food pantry is open for public distribution around Midland, it will accept any kind of pet food and brand donation from residents, according to Griffin Hobson. Currently, there is no defined limit for how many times a resident can access the pantry for the cat or dog. In the future, Animal Services may establish a clear limit for usage. Now, the pantry will be accessible on a first-come, first-served basis. Residents can come any time from the animal shelter's opening to an hour before it's closed during all business days. Space Pioneers. Midland students create experiments for Apollo series. The story was written by Kesley Salinas. Leeches, methane, or plants could make their way into space thanks to students who are participating in the Go for Launch Apollo series in Midland. Go for Launch is a hands-on STEM program of Higher Orbits, a nonprofit organization that aims to encourage students to pursue careers in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Over the past 2 days, students from 8th grade to seniors engaged in space-inspired activities, collaborating with each other and learning from aerospace professionals to create an experiment for the Apollo series. Quote, "We're excited to bring Go for Launch back to Midland," said Michelle Lucas, founder and chief executive of Higher Orbits. Continuing the quote, "We run this program all across the country, offering kids the opportunity to connect with astronauts and other professionals that they normally wouldn't have access to. We're trying to show them that being a student who loves space and science is not only cool, it opens doors," end quote. The student experiments vary from creating methane to measuring plant growth in space, and even leeches. Quote, "We decided to send leeches into space for first aid, said Hannah Wolf, who will enter her senior year at Early College High School. Quote, leeches are constantly used as a replacement for stitches in surgery, and they were used as medicine in the olden days. We wanted to send them out to space and see how they would react and grow, end quote. Tyler Abila, who will be a senior next school year at Legacy High, said his group wanted to create methane. Quote, we will be using feed for our bacteria that will make methane, which, in return, can make us biofuel or power that can possibly be used for rocket ships on a new planet or even new space stations, Abila said. Nolan Snow, a homeschooled eighth grader, said his group this year has been cooperative with their experiment. Quote, we're sending a plant into space for 30 days to see how it grows there, said Snow. Then we'll do the same thing on Earth to see if it affects the plant in any way, end quote. The student-designed experiments have the chance to fly to the International Space Station. One group will be selected as the first winners of the Apollo series. They will then go head-to-head with the winning teams of the next two Apollo series events. The overall winning team of the Apollo series has the chance to work with Space Tango, a higher orbits partner, to build their experiment that will then launch on a cargo mission to the International Space Station. Retired NASA astronaut Jim J.R. Riley joined the 7th Gopher Launch Program as mentor for the students. He is the 7th astronaut that Higher Orbits has brought to Midland. Lucas, who was also a technical instructor at NASA, said this program is a great way to get students engaged in STEM and to build teamwork, leadership, and communication skills. Quote, these students are awesome, Lucas said. They're coming up with amazing ideas. Each team has to define and design an experiment that could fly in space, and they're all working on that very diligently. They're excited about the possibilities, end quote. Some of the students participating in this Go for Launch program have done the program several times. This is Snow's second year. He said his experiment group this year has made the experience better than it was last year. Snow is interested in becoming an Air Force pilot. Quote, my experience has been good this year, Snow said. There's ups and downs, but like my dad says, if you look for and find the ups, then it's hard to focus on the downs, end quote. Wolf said this is her third year attending the program. She's currently working toward her associate degree in engineering. Quote, I feel really confident in our experiment this year, Wolf said. I feel like we've come up with something really good, end quote. Abila has also participated in the program for 3 years. He is interested in being an aerospace engineer and an astrophysicist. Quote, I've always been interested in space, Abila said. It's been an amazing experience. I always love coming here, end quote. Family mourns truck driver killed in Midland shooting. The story was written by B.K. Richter. One of the last texts that 26-year-old Austin Wynn sent was to his mother for Mother's Day. Earlier that day, he had finished hauling a load of horses to the Midland area from Oklahoma and was on his way back home to his family. Quote, he was very familiar with the route, said his sister, Ashlyn Wynn. We were both familiar with the area in Midland. We never thought the area was unsafe or felt that we were in danger, end quote. Austin Wynn was killed in Midland on the morning of May 12th. His body was found near the 10,400 block of West I-20. When Midland County deputies arrived, Wynn was found with a gunshot wound while lying outside of a semi-truck. Quote, "I thought initially that he had gone to a gas station for food," Ashland said, "but he never made it past his truck." End quote. For Austin's family, the shock of losing a family member so suddenly is unreal. Quote, "I keep expecting him to walk down my driveway," Ashland said. "We talked every day, all day long. It is unbelievable to me that people are so cruel." End quote. Perhaps the worst part, Ashland said as she overcame tears, was the loss of an uncle to her 3-year-old son. Quote, "My little boy has to grow up without him," she said. "They had a very close bond." End quote. Ashland described her brother as outgoing and always willing to help anyone. Quote, "He never met a stranger, and he was always smiling," she said. The case is currently being investigated as a homicide. Midland residents with any information on this case that leads to the suspect's arrest will be eligible for a $6,000 cash reward. Call Midland Crime Stoppers at 432-694-TIPS or use the P3 Mobile TIPS app. No caller identification is used, and calls will remain anonymous. Ashley Wynn encouraged those with any information to call the hotline or contact the Midland County Sheriff's Office. Right to seek second term on Railroad Commission. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Jim Wright has decided one term on the Railroad Commission isn't long enough to accomplish his to-do list. However, that list is not complete, so he has decided to seek a second term at the agency. Quote, "I ran for the Railroad Commission thinking I could accomplish my to-do list in one term," he told the Reporter-Telegram during a visit to Midland this week. "It's important that I'm here, and I keep accomplishing items on that list." The position will be on the November 3, 2026 ballot. Wright, one of 3 statewide elected commissioners, said he sees the position focusing on 3 things: safety, the environment, and the economic viability of the energy industry. Quote, "It's a tough job in how you address concerns about safety and the environment while having the least impact on the industry and the state," he remarked. Other regulatory agencies, particularly federal agencies, ask how the commission oversees the state's massive energy industry, and he tells them, quote, "We're doing it with common sense," end quote. In recent years, he has found himself talking with federal regulators who have no clue how the oil and gas industry operates or how it benefits people and the economy. Instead, he said, their message is the need to transition away from fossil fuels, something he says will never happen. One item on his to-do list yet to be completed is gaining primacy over Class 6 injection wells, carbon dioxide injection wells, from the Environmental Protection Agency, an effort that has been pending for 2 years. Quote, "I feel we're very close," Wright said. He reported that the give and take with the EPA over the issue, including addressing emergency preparedness if something happens during the injection process. "It has been helpful to have other states who have received primacy, North Dakota, Wyoming, and Louisiana, standing with Texas during the process." He said he is proud that he testified before the Texas Senate's Water, Agriculture, and Rural Affairs Committee on alternative uses for produced water last month. He is also proud that the oil and gas industry is taking a proactive approach to seismicity, asking the agency meet every 60 days to discuss what is causing seismicity in areas of the state. In the wake of seismic events, like 5.3 magnitude earthquakes near Pecos in November 2023 and another near Midland in December, the Commission has moved to restrict water injection volumes, depths, and pressures based on the data and knowledge available at the time. Quote, "The industry feels if we get better data, we maybe won't have to restrict injection in a full circle around the event, just a slice," he said. "As we get better real-time data and understand events better, we'll get better reactions," end quote. A growing network of arrays, both private and public, can help pinpoint areas that are prone to seismic events and areas that aren't, he added, providing data on where it can be safe to inject produced water. But finding alternative uses for that produced water can reduce the need for injection, reducing subsurface pressures that can trigger seismic events while providing much-needed new sources of water, Wright said. Quote, "The technology is moving fast, and if we marry those two needs, we're killing two birds with one stone," he said. Greenhouse gas emissions are also a significant concern, and he said the agency and industry keep getting what he called fastballs from the administration on the issue. Quote, "We need to get in front of those concerns, have really good data, and show them how the state and industry are addressing emissions," he said. Midland police warn of scam call impersonating chief. The story was written by B.K. Richter. Midland police have recently been made aware of a scam call circulating in which the caller claims to be Interim Police Chief Greg Snow. The call states that the subject has a warrant and needs to pay the caller immediately. Residents should be aware that this call is a scam and that Chief Snow did not approve the message. The Midland Police Department advised that they do not call the public regarding warrants or payments. Residents are urged to stay vigilant and not to provide any personal information or payment details to callers. Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, June 13th. Mayford E. Mathis Sr., age 78, of Midland, passed away on June 3rd. A celebration of life will take place at 11 a.m. Saturday, June 15th, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Mayford, affectionately known as Cat or Pappy Cat, was born to Hazel May Ogle and James Robert Mathis on October 1, 1945, as the fifth oldest sibling of the seven. He was a father of three. He worked for M.F. Machen from 1962 to 1986 and was ranked number one on dozers and polling units in the state. He then started M&M Construction Incorporated in 1984. In the year 2000, the name was changed to CJJ Construction Incorporated. Mayford is survived by his wife Patricia, three sons, Mayford Jr., and Chantel, and their five kids. Everly, Paladin, Bram, and Berkeley, Madeline, son Joe, and Allie and their kids, Levi, Jolie, Bernardo, and son James Mathis, two sisters, Grace and Fleeta. Mayford is preceded in death by his father and mother, James Mathis and Hazel Ogle, sisters Vivian Blair and Donna Mathis, brother George Mathis, and James D. Mathis. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Frank Johnson, a resident of Granbury, Texas, born October 31, 1933, in Hartshorne, Oklahoma, passed away on June 9th. He was preceded in death by his parents, George Haskell Johnson and Lottie Wilcox Johnson, his siblings, Johnny Potter and Jerry Johnson, and his wife, Lois Jean Johnson. Frank is survived by his three children, Larry Johnson and wife Lori, Frankie Johnson and wife Mecca, and Paula Johnson Turner, and by an extended family member, Jeannie Toombs. He has four grandchildren and four great-grandchildren. Services for Frank Johnson will be on Tuesday, June 18th at 11 a.m. at Willow Park Baptist Church in Willow Park, Texas. In lieu of flowers, if you feel so inclined, please donate to World Harvest Baptist Missions in memory of Dr. Frank Johnson at World Harvest Baptist Missions, 900 County Road 727, Galesville, Alabama, 35973. Patsy Anaya, age 77, passed away on Monday, June 10th. A celebration of life will be at 2 p.m. on Thursday, June 13th, at the branch at NPW, 3800 North Big Spring Street in Midland. Patsy was born on February 7, 1947, in Clovis, New Mexico, to Sunday and Hazel Muriel Martinez. Patsy lived a simple but rich life with her husband, Izzy. As a teenager, she and her youngest sister, Alicia, lived for a while in Inglewood, California, where they attended school. She later returned to Clovis to be a bridesmaid for her closest cousin's wedding. Upon entering a local beauty pageant, she was introduced to Izzy Anaya. They later married shortly before he was drafted in the Army in 1966. They created a life and started a family that spanned from Clovis, Las Cruces, and eventually they landed in Midland, Texas, raising their little family. Patsy and Izzy enjoyed singing in the church choir at Our Lady of Guadalupe, volunteering in Marriage Encounter, Church Crucillos, and playing volleyball on the weekends. She is survived by their two children, Mitzi and Peter, son-in-law George Velos II, two granddaughters, a grandson-in-law, and two great-grandchildren. She is preceded in death by her husband, Izzy, parents, Sunday and Hazel Martinez, sister, Alicia Robles, brothers, Jimmy, William, and Herman Murillo. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Brois Jean Worley, age 86, of Midland, passed away on Friday, June 7th, at her home in Bangs, Texas. Graveside services will be held Thursday, June 13th at 10 a.m. at Rest Haven Memorial Park, located at 4616 North Big Spring Street in Midland. Arrangements have been entrusted to Ellis Funeral Home. Please visit ellisfunerals.com to leave online condolences.
This is Christy, and I'll be reading Odessa American for June 13, 2024. ECISD holds property unveiling for new facilities. OA News at oaoa.com. future sites of a new middle school and career and technical education center financed with a $424,263,000 bond were revealed Tuesday as they are now officially Ector County ISD properties. Signs with digital renderings were put up to mark the spot of the new facilities. The middle school will be located at South Tripp Avenue and Hudson Road in West Odessa, and the Career and Technical Education Center will be at East Murphy Street, just east of the intersection with Meadow Avenue. Superintendent Scott Murray expressed gratitude to the community for supporting the bond. "It's a monumental day in ECISD," Murray said. The district thought about community needs. ECISD worked with the bond advisory committee to develop a bond package, educated the community, and in November 2023, one of three propositions passed. On August 15, 2023, the Ector County ISD Board of Trustees unanimously voted to place three school bond propositions on the ballot for November 7, 2023. The total price of the three proposition was $436,109,000 and did not require an increase in the district's total tax rate. The items included in each proposition came as recommendations from the 2023 bond committee that worked from January to May developing this list, district information stated. Proposition A for $424,263,000 was the one that passed. It included the new Career and Technical Education Center, the new middle school, district-wide maintenance and repairs, bus purchases, and new transportation facility technology updates, complete renovation of the Permian High School auditorium, complete replacement of the Transition Learning Center, a facility for students with special needs learning to transition from school to the workforce, complete replacement of classroom buildings and barns at the agricultural farm, LED lighting at the Odessa High School baseball and tennis stadiums, LED lighting at the Permian High School baseball stadium, resurfacing of tennis stadiums at all middle schools, replacement of indoor bleachers in main gyms of all middle schools, and purchasing land for the new middle school. The land for the CTE Center was donated by Grow Odessa. Officials estimate the complete cost of the building and outfitting the middle school with furniture, fixtures, and equipment would be $120 million. "Today is a huge step along that journey," Murray said. He added that the community feedback has been incredibly positive. "People are excited about what this means. I still think there was a little bit of skepticism. Is this really going to happen? And so today is absolutely yes. They can drive by the facility. They can see that we own the property. There's a rendering of what those facilities will look like," Murray said. Kevin Searcy, a member of the bond advisory committee, was on hand with his wife, Sierra. He said they were still working on the bond when they went to the middle school location to talk about it. "It's really interesting to see because we had a few people that had showed up and really supported the bond and got out on the west side to talk about it. One of the women that helped us just lives right around the corner. Now the location is right across the street from her, and she's got kids that were, I think, three or four at the time. So they'll definitely get the benefit from this," Searcy said. He added that it still feels surreal because you can't see the work, but he knows the square footage, how many students will be served, how far Crockett Middle School is from it, and how it starts to kind of feel like a reality now. "There are homes right across the street from the middle school site. This area is about as underserved as it can be. You can see the ECUD, Ector County Utility District Tower, right here. You know some of the stories about ECISD's poverty level. A good majority of that is in the west side and south side, and this serves both. I think it's a big deal for every person out here," Searcy said. "It's a centralized location. I know a lot of people were a little concerned that it was a little south, but south is growing too. They have that opportunity coming right off the interstate. I think it serves a lot more people than most realize," he added. "This is about as centralized as you can get for the amount of property that they needed. The middle school will serve a little more than 1,000 students in about 120,000 square feet. We own 42 acres of property right here, and we're excited to build. There will be homes created in the northern part of this property, so we'll be surrounded by families. We're excited to be within this community. We are scheduled to open in August of 2026. We have a lot of work to do between now and that time. We are excited to engage our community as we continue to plan for this exciting new middle school. Thank you to the voters in Ector County that made this day and this facility possible for the students of ECISD. We are incredibly grateful. For generations, students will be traveling through this drive, entering this particular middle school," Murray said. The Career and Technical Education Center, estimated to cost $80 million, will have about 2,400 students going through it. Our career and technical education facility will be a game changer for this entire community because not only will it serve high school students at night and on the weekends, Odessa College will occupy that space, so it will serve for upskilling and reskilling purposes. The adults in this community, so it's a game-changing facility, Murray said. Murray said the students deserve state-of-the-art facilities. They deserve to have access to the latest and greatest, if you will, and the new career and technical education facility, as an example, will provide our students and members of our community with state-of-the-art access to facilities, to equipment that will truly prepare them for the world of work and beyond. It's a monumental day in ECISD, Murray said. With the new middle school at some point in the future, they will be reassigning teachers, but Murray noted that the district is growing, so it will continue to add staff members. The new career and technical education facility will be similar. We will take programming that currently exists in one location and move it to the CTE Center. We'll be adding some new programming as well. In that case, we would certainly be hiring some new experts to teach those new programs and courses, Murray said. The district doesn't know yet what they will do with the Frost building that currently houses several career and technical programs. Part of the process over the next couple of years will be to figure out how we will use facilities that we may end up vacating, but no plans yet, Murray said. ECISD hopes to open the new middle school to serve students in August 2026, so plans would be to have the groundbreaking in January 2025. The Career and Technical Education Facility groundbreaking would also be in January 2025, with plans to finish it in 2 years. But we'll see, because there could always be construction delays and things like that. But that's what we're planning right now, Murray said. Odessans Fighting to Get Adopted Girl Out of Haiti by James Keith, OA News at OAOA.com. Craig and Haley Foreman love their daughter, building memories and picking up on her personality traits as their child continues to grow. You can tell she's strong-willed. She's very strong-willed, Haley Foreman said, chuckling while speaking. She likes when we read to her. Her favorite book is Brown Bear. Brown Bear, what do you see? Craig Foreman said she has begun to become more and more open with her parents as well. She loves to dance and loves to sing, Foreman said. She sang a little bit for us for the first time in a while. Unfortunately, these experiences come paired with distressing conditions. The Foremans are forced to make these memories with their daughter once a month on FaceTime as Haitian gang violence keeps the 4-year-old trapped in Haiti waiting for adoption to be finalized. After being matched with their daughter in May of 2023, the Foremans have waited to bring their adopted daughter home from Haiti. However, a surge in targeted gang violence that began on February 29th has forced Haiti into a state of emergency, stalling the adoption process for the Foremans. According to the United Nations press release, the gang violence has resulted in the deaths or injuries of more than 2,500 people, with more than 180,000 children now internally displaced. Haley Foreman said the gang control and violence in Haiti had been growing for years, but has now become uncontrollable. There is a temporary government put into place right now, but they have been unable to gain control of the gangs, Foreman said. That's why you have these outside military forces being sent there to get control of that. The Foremans are currently one of 25 families fighting to bring their adopted child home from Haiti as 71 children wait to come to the United States. Foreman said they're in contact with other families and are working with immigration and adoption attorneys to advocate for the State Department for emergency humanitarian parole. We have had weekly calls, Foreman said. It's being headed by our attorneys and they kind of give us our advocacy checklist for the week and what to do and update us on our progress. Craig Foreman said the communication with the Office of the Children Issues has been very broad, with certain statements not being cohesive with others. Despite this, the families and attorneys have worked to find legal and ethical solution. We're asking for emergency humanitarian parole to be issued for every child that has an American family so that they can come home, Foreman said. In our understanding from our attorneys, that is an absolute possibility in a legal way, Foreman said. The State Department is hesitant to fulfill the request, as it would make it a more difficult process for citizenship. However, Foreman said their attorneys have told them that this is not true. Our viewpoint is she will be able to have citizenship, Foreman said. We have an Article 5 letter and preliminary visa approval and all these things that we've embedded. We just don't want her to die. Foreman said that from the way things have gone, the Haitian government has been more helpful to their cause than the United States government. Despite all the hardships and uncertainty, Foreman said he still has faith that their daughter will come home, expecting the feeling to be a sense of both joy and relief. Even though I've never touched her, and I've never hugged her, and I've never talked to her in person, she still feels like our gift, Foreman said. She's beautiful. Homegrown hero, Seibert, eager to lead College of Education, OA News at OAOA.com. Having just wrapped up her 26th year in education, Jennifer Seibert had run through the range of jobs from elementary through high school to teacher, coach, principal, and opening new campuses. Starting officially on July 1st, she'll be putting her considerable experience in Odessa and Midland to work as Dean of the College of Education at University of Texas Permian Basin. A native of West Odessa and graduate of Odessa High School, Seibert was most recently principal of Midland High School and has headed the Young Women's Leadership Academy, STEM Academy, and Booker T. Washington. She is also an adjunct professor in the College of Education at UTPB. When she finished her doctorate in 2014, Seibert said she didn't see herself in higher education yet. The dean's position was open 5 or 6 years ago, but she didn't think she was ready yet. But now, with the shortage of teachers, principals, special education teachers, bilingual ESL teachers, and diagnosticians, to name a few, the native West Texan said she felt she could help make an impact. One of the things that I think I'm best at is building relationships with people, convincing people in our area that if you want to be a teacher or counselor or principal, UT Permian Basin should be your first choice. By increasing enrollment and getting more students into the program, that has a bigger impact on our community as a whole, so we won't be short-staffed at our schools, Seibert said. So really, nothing more than I think my impact or my reach could have been bigger. And so that's why I decided to go ahead and apply for this position now that it was open this time, Seibert said. All the high schools in the area offer a pathway for teacher education, so she wants to make sure that they are strategically hitting the high schools and drawing in students interested in teaching so they can be moved on to UTPB. A mother of two, Seibert has a bachelor's degree in kinesiology and a minor in math from UTPB, a master's in athletic administration and a principal certification from UTPB, and a superintendent certification through Region 18 Education Service Center. She was part of a cohort of 12 UTPB students who got their doctorates through a partnership with UT San Antonio. She wants to let prospective students know that if they want to be a teacher, there's no reason to leave West Texas. We want to be the best program for our students here and be the number one choice for students in West Texas getting their teacher certification, Seibert said. She added that there is a lot of scholarship money for students so they can graduate debt-free. There are also residencies and other programs that can give new teachers experience right away. Students can also practice their craft virtually before they go into an actual classroom. Getting our teachers real-world teaching experiences as quickly as possible is what I think will help inspire them. Learning how to teach from a book is way less effective than learning how to teach in front of actual students, Seibert said. She added that people who enter any kind of service industry want to motivate others. Giving them the opportunity to inspire people and get them excited about their future is really what I want to jumpstart, she said. Increasing the visibility of UTPB as an option goes with the objective of increasing enrollment, but also making sure the program in the College of ED are quality and top-notch, and that we're competitive with other universities so that when students decide they want to be a teacher or a counselor or a diagnostician or administrator, they know that STEP programs at UT Permian Basin are quality, Seibert said. Although she's stepping into administration, she doesn't want to leave the teaching side. There's nothing more exciting. I teach future campus leaders, future administrators, assistant principals, central office leadership. They're excited about the future, and so I never want to lose touch with that, Seibert said. She said they have to seek out the best teachers in the schools because they're the ones that are inspiring others and making a difference every day. Right now, what's really big in Midland ISD and Ector County ISD is the teacher incentive allotment, being able to make more money by staying in the classroom, Seibert said. When I started my career, it was to be a teacher and then move to an assistant principal role and just kind of move up. but it isn't like that right now. We're really trying to inspire teachers to stay in their classroom, do what they really love to do, but then also making sure that they're compensated for it. Seibert added, putting the best teachers in front of people will help attract people to the field. We have to be advocates for our profession. It's so easy to get down on education. Things aren't perfect and things aren't going great. Kids are using AI and kids are lazy and all of those things, but they're not always. So finding those great teachers and using those teachers to help build our programs, I think, could be key, she added. Top officials at UTPB like Raj Dakshinamurthy, UTPB's provost and senior vice president of academic affairs, are thrilled to have Seibert on board. She replaces Larry Daniel, the previous dean of College of Education. Dr. Seibert's appointment to dean of the College of Education is particularly significant, given her strong ties to our region and her decades of classroom and educational leadership experience, which began right here at UTPB as an undergraduate and graduate student. Dakshinamurthy said in a news release, Dr. Seibert embodies the excellence and dedication we aim to inspire in our students. We are confident that Dr. Seibert will bring innovative ideas and strategic initiatives to our College of Education. Jennifer Seibert, recently named new dean of the College of Education at UTPB, poses for a photo outside the library on campus. She officially starts July 1st and has a varied career in education. Photo by Abraham Franco. Enrolling in Medicare over 65 with health issues by Tony King. Hello, Tony. I am retiring on January 1st, 2025, and am beginning to search for the right Medicare option for me and my wife, who is having cancer treatment at a local cancer center. Her cancer treatment drugs are expensive, and I am concerned about the Medicare Part D out of pocket. I am a diabetic and use a FlexPen and take high blood pressure medications. Most of my prescriptions are generic, except for the diabetic prescriptions. Our Medicare Part B will begin January 1st as my company benefits will end December 31st of this year. What should I do to prepare for this medical insurance change? I will be 70 and my wife Sandy is turning 65 by the time I retire, and I want to be sure I do this correctly. Tony, I am looking forward to what you have to say about this stressful Medicare subject. Thanks, Scott from San Antonio. Great question, Scott. When we meet the clients during a Tony Says Medicare consultation, we emphasize that Medicare is not cookie cutter. One size does not fit all. Everyone's finances, health, and prescriptions are different, and your healthcare needs, as well as prescription drugs that you take, should be considered in finalizing your Medicare choices. The cornerstone of Medicare planning at the Tony Says offices is discussing Medicare Part B prescription drug planning. Scott, it is imperative to search for the most cost-effective Medicare Part D prescription drug plan that covers all the prescriptions that you and Sandy have. Many people simply don't practice proper Medicare Part D planning. They are more concerned about their doctors and fail to notice whether their prescriptions are covered under their new Medicare Part D or Medicare Advantage prescription drug plan. To understand Medicare Part D and the famous donut hole, read Chapter 5 of Tony's Medicare Survival Guide Advanced Edition. Every Medicare Part D plan has a formulary, whether it is in a standalone Part D plan or Medicare Advantage Part C with prescription drug plan. If your drugs are not on a formulary, you will pay 100% out of your pocket. The 2025 Medicare Part D plans will be released this fall on October 1st. Scott, I recommend that you and Sandy begin researching which Medicare Part D plan covers all your prescriptions and has the best price since you are retiring on January 1st. Medicare Part B is like gold because of what it offers, and those receiving Medicare Part B for the first time need to understand the value of the Medigap Medicare Supplement open enrollment period. The Medicare and You Handbook discusses when you buy a Medicare supplement. The best time to buy a Medigap policy is during your Medigap open enrollment period. This six-month period begins the first month you have Medicare Part B, medical insurance, and you're 65 or older. During this six-month window, you can enroll in any Medicare supplement plan without having to answer any health questions, and you cannot be denied coverage. After the six-month window, then medical underwriting takes place, and those with existing health problems may not qualify for a Medicare supplement plan. Many new Medicare beneficiaries explore the option of a Medicare Advantage Plan Part C, which can be a good option. With the health conditions that you and Sandy have, Scott, be sure that you discuss with all your doctors which Medicare Advantage, HMO, or PPO plans they accept. Understanding the complexity of Medicare is exhausting to America. For answers to your Medicare questions, call the Tony Says Medicare team at 832-519-8664 or email info@tonysays.com. Tony's Medicare Moments articles have just been released at familytalktoday.com/Medicare-moments. The Medicare Survival Guide Advanced Edition is available at tonysays.com. UTPB's new dance coach is determined to bring team to next level by Alexandra Macia, special from UTPB. University of Texas Permian Basin alum Brooklyn Anderson is the new dance team coach. A lifelong dancer herself, Anderson was a varsity Panther Paw at Permian High School and has been a choreographer and coach for 6 years. I was so honored to receive the job and to have the opportunity to take the Falcon dance team to NDA College Nationals in Daytona Beach, Florida, in April. UTPB is such a special university, and people truly don't understand how lucky they are to have it right here in Odessa, said Anderson. Anderson said she is excited to grow the dance program and hopes to attract even more dancers to UTPB. She believes in coaching dancers to not only dance, but to be good, successful people. I am proud to represent a school that offers so many academic options, financial support, and scholarship opportunities to students to help set them up for success and leave college debt-free. I know for my personal life, being debt-free out of college was a game-changer in getting my life started, so it's very important to me to advocate for long-term success of students, said Anderson. Her goal is to produce an impressive game day team for sporting events at UTPB, as she believes dance and cheer are essential to the overall atmosphere on game days. This year, UTPB dance placed 6th in Daytona for college nationals out of all D2 schools in hip-hop. Next year, they plan on competing in 2 styles to increase their skill set. My goal is to build well-rounded dancers that are able to represent our school well in all areas, said Anderson. The team is close to doubling in size next year, growing from 9 to 16 dancers. Anderson hopes to build and grow a program that makes the community proud. They have recruited 6 girls so far from places including Permian High School, Odessa High School, Big Spring High School, and other dance studios across West Texas. I think it is impressive to already be gaining some interest in our program from so many experienced dancers. We're building an impressive team, and I can't wait to get to work on taking our program to the next level, said Anderson. Serving those who served, VFW Auxiliary to host breakfast to honor veterans and service members. By Nathaniel Miller, OA News at OAOA.com. Brenda Grant is not a veteran, but her husband and several family members have served in the United States military. As the senior vice president of the Veterans of Foreign Affairs Auxiliary in Odessa, Grant has heard the stories from veterans in Ector County who visit Post 4372. Her husband, Corey Grant, is senior vice commander of the post and Air Force veteran. As a family member, Brenda Grant has seen personally what family members go through and sacrifice when someone serves in the military. Feeling thankful for what the military has done, Grant said the least she can do is try to serve those who served, even if it's just breakfast. At 8 a.m. Saturday, the VFW Auxiliary will host a breakfast open to the public at the VFW Bingo Hall at 208 East VFW Lane. Being called the Veterans Cafe for the event, breakfast will consist of biscuits and gravy, sausage, bacon, eggs, fruit, milk, and coffee. Veterans and active duty military members eat for free. The public can purchase entry into breakfast for $10, and children are $5. The event is cash only. 2 additional breakfasts are also scheduled for July 27th and August 10th. They're my family, Brenda Grant said, of the members of the VFW. I see them as my family now. And as my family member, you want to do everything you can for them. The Veterans of Foreign Wars of the United States Auxiliary was established in 1914 to serve veterans and their families, with local chapters formed to serve their communities. Having been a volunteer for a year, Grant said she was recently elected to her position, hoping to find ways to support the VFW and get the community more involved. Money raised during the breakfasts will go toward funding additional community events, such as an Easter event and a Thanksgiving dinner. Rick Mitchell, commander for VFW Post 4372, said Grant and the auxiliary establishing a breakfast is a great way to unite the community and its veterans. I truly believe that this is just the beginning of great things to come, Mitchell said. Grant said she and the auxiliary look forward to serving the veterans of Ector County. I'm looking to do more for this community, not just our veterans, but their families too, she said. Juneteenth celebration is 5 days, by Nathaniel Miller, OA News at OAOA.com. Juneteenth has only been a federal holiday for 3 years, but the Black Cultural Council of Odessa has been celebrating the event for more than 2 decades. This year, the council will be celebrating its 25th year of hosting Juneteenth in Odessa with events that will educate and honor the meaning of the day. We're committed to our past and shaping our future, Joanne Davenport Little John with the Black Cultural Council of Odessa said. Made a federal holiday in 2021, Juneteenth celebrates June 19, 1865, when the announcement of General Order No. 3 transmitted news of the Emancipation Proclamation in Galveston, proclaiming the end of slavery in Texas. For 25 years, since the founding of the Black Cultural Council of Odessa, the group has hosted the largest organized Juneteenth in Texas. The annual celebration includes events such as live music, games, dancing, and organized basketball tournament. This year's celebration begins with an official kickoff at noon on June 19th at the BCCO's office at 1020 East Murphy Street. The fourth annual all-white party, an event with a dress code mandating all-white clothing, is scheduled for June 20th at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. Familiar events such as Youth in the Park and the Parade are both scheduled for June 21st, and musical entertainment is scheduled at Woodson Park from June 21st through June 23rd. Each evening will also include a children's area for young children. Little John said this year's Hometown Heroes will recognize 3 members of the community, Helen Jones, Ernest, Derek, and Maggie Hunter. They're full of wisdom, and we want to set aside time to acknowledge them and the contributions they made to our city, she said. A gospel celebration with the Reverend Mark D. Hood, Sr. from Tyler, Texas, is scheduled for 6 p.m. at the Greater St. John Baptist Church. Little John said everyone in Odessa is invited to attend the events, saying the community is stronger when together. This is not limited to African Americans. It's open to all, and we welcome everybody, she said. Odessan facing aggravated assault charge. OA News at OAOA.com. A 20-year-old Odessan man was arrested last Wednesday night after several people told authorities he fired multiple rounds of a Glock 19 during a dispute with another man. According to an Ector County Sheriff's Office report, someone called 911 around 8:30 p.m. Wednesday about a man getting out of a car and shooting someone in the 7200 block of West Dunn. A 19-year-old man told deputies that Jotzel Rocha Garcia told him, "I have a gun. Back the expletive up before I shoot you," and then fired 2 or 3 shots beside his foot as he, the alleged victim, walked back toward his vehicle. The man told deputies he feared for his life and wanted to pursue charges. According to the report, multiple witnesses identified Garcia as the shooter, and deputies found a Glock 19 in his vehicle with 3 missing rounds. Garcia, who was found with a fentanyl pill in his possession, also told deputies he fired 2 rounds at the ground, the report stated. Garcia was arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon and possession of a controlled substance. He remained in the Ector County Jail Friday night on surety bonds totaling $65,000. Brenda Jo Moon Darden, Odessa, 69, passed away on June 5, 2024, at home in the loving arms of her husband in Odessa, Texas. Funeral services will be held at 3 p.m. Saturday, June 15, 2024, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home in Odessa, Texas, with Pastor Cliff DeArmond of Hope Alive Church officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign her guestbook at www.sunsetodessa.com. Barbara Helen Gray San Angelo, age 77, peacefully passed away Saturday, June 8, 2024, in Lubbock, Texas. Visitation will be held at Harper Funeral Home on June 12th from 3 to 5 p.m. with funeral services on June 13th at 3 o'clock. Burial will follow at Lawn Haven Memorial Gardens. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests donations be made to the Concho Valley Regional Food Bank, https://conchovalleyfoodbank.org. Family and friends may share online condolences at www.harper-funeralhome.com. Kenny Michael Scott found his peace Thursday, June 6, 2024, at the young age of 31. A celebration of life to honor Kenneth will be held on Saturday, June 15, 2024, at 10 a.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home. Ronnie Ray Montgomery, 77, of Midland, passed away Saturday, June 8, 2024, in Odessa. He was born February 17, 1947, in Bowling Green, Kentucky. No public services are scheduled at this time, but plans for an honorary guard service will be scheduled in the near future. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to the Midland Humane Coalition, P.O. Box 53213, Midland 79710, or ASPCA of Midland, 2701 South County Road 1206, Midland 79706. Ellis Funeral Home has been entrusted with arrangements. Please visit ellisfunerals.com to leave online condolences. Henry Rico, Jr., father, brother, friend, businessman, larger-than-life storyteller, jokester, jack-of-all-trades, passed away peacefully in his sleep on March 28th. A small memorial service will be held in Midland on June 15th, 2024. For service details, please email Jessica Spencer at henry.rico.memorial@gmail.com. Chocolate before bed helps with nightly urination. Dear Dr. Roach, I am a 75-year-old male who has had benign prostatic hyperplasia, BPH, for about 20 years and have taken Tamoxifen during this time. I've always had to urinate at least once per night and up to 3 to 4 times per night periodically. 2 weeks ago, I had a chocolate craving just before bed and had 3 Hershey Kisses. That night, I did not get up once and did not have a severe urge to urinate when I did wake up. So I started eating 3 Kisses before bed nightly and got the exact same results. On night 8, I refrained from the kisses and got up twice to urinate. I'm in my second week of eating kisses with the same positive results. Is this by total chance or is there a real connection? PR. Answer. Getting up multiple times in the night can certainly be from a large prostate, and Tamsulosin is a common and effective treatment. When I see persistent symptoms despite Tamsulosin, I consider the possibility of an overactive bladder, OAB, although it could be just severe BPH. Chocolate tends to make OAB worse, so I don't think OAB is likely in your case. I tried to find out why chocolate might make BPH better. Some studies found that it may work as a hormone blocker, similar to the prescription drug finasteride, but I doubt that's the case for you, since finasteride takes weeks or months to become effective. I did find several case reports of people having improvement in their symptoms from eating chocolate, so it could be possible that it's working. It is also possible that you're having a placebo response. You believe it might help, so it does. But since you didn't take it as a treatment at first, it also seems unlikely to me. Chocolate has fewer side effects than many of our prescription drugs, though, so I wouldn't dissuade you from enjoying your modest dose of chocolate at night. To your good health, Dr. Keith Roach. Roach's column appears Tuesdays through Saturdays. Readers may write him at P.O. Box 536-475, Orlando, Florida 32853-6475.
Here is the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, June 13th. News of pregnancy likely to make waves among group. Dear Abby, for a long time I thought I was unable to have children. My doctors told me it would be a difficult process and my chances were low due to chronic illnesses I live with. I have accepted this fact because having a family was the reason I divorced in my late 20s. My ex didn't want it, and I did, though I didn't yet know I was likely infertile. Learning this afterward was devastating, but I pivoted into recovery with grit and faith. I'm in my 30s now, and my closest friends are women who have infertility issues as well, or who have chosen to be childless. I have built a happy life that includes travel, an MBA, an exciting career, and the bandwidth to be a support system for others. I've made my health a priority, and I have learned to love my body. Well, to our great surprise, my boyfriend and I learned we were pregnant 6 weeks ago. So far, all the signs point to this being a healthy, viable pregnancy, and we couldn't be more thrilled. We are both ready for this next big adventure. But knowing how painful birth announcements can be for people with infertility, I'm reluctant to share my happy news. As I near my second trimester and my life begins to change shape to welcome our miracle, I wonder how I can compassionately let my community know in a way that honors what we've been through together. I'm worried about bitterness during a time of so much sweetness. Signed, Elated in the Midwest. Dear Elated, my warmest congratulations to you and your boyfriend. Because you realize that it may upset some of your friends, forego a big bash announcement and confide in a few of your closest friends. Knowing human nature, I'm sure the news will spread quickly. Those who love you will be happy for you. Those who can't bring themselves to feel that way will fade into the background, but please do not feel guilty for your happiness because you are entitled to it. Dear Abby, how do you handle an annoying neighbor who refuses to use his own trash and recycle bins and sneaks his discards into mine on pickup day? He lives alone, as do several women in the neighborhood, and he's not helpful to anyone but himself, in good weather or bad. The only time he speaks to me is when he has a complaint about overgrown shrubs or trees near his property. What should I say? Signed, Annoyed Neighbor in New Mexico. Dear neighbor, say you do not want him to put anything in your garbage cans. If he continues to do it, you may have to buy cans you can lock. Of course, you will have to unlock them for pickup, but it may be worth the trouble to ensure that your garbage is pristine. Contact Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or Post Office Box 69440, Los Angeles, California 90069.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.